Hello, and welcome to Essential Work, exploring the past, present, and future of jobs. This podcast brought to you by the Battle of Homestead Foundation. I'm Nathan Ruggles. Thank you so much for listening. Each week, we bring you stories and struggles, people and perspectives, interviews and commentaries, all on the world of work yesterday, today, and tomorrow. We look at the most important issues people face on the job through a unique lens of history and time and music. If you're a history buff, if you appreciate human-centered stories, if you face your own challenges on the job, if you're curious about what the workplace of the future will look like, if you're left dissatisfied with typical newsy talk devoid of a perspective either grounded in the past or looking ahead, if you enjoy how music can provide an artistic window into issues, this is the podcast for you. Here in our seventh episode, Patty DeMarco returns with Pathways to a New Economy that Works for All of Us. After that, Larry McCullough will join us with the latest from the Battle of Homestead Foundation and his music selections related to the theme of our feature interview, which in this case is the protection and destruction of our natural world, including fracking. Those are just some of the topics Patty delves into this week with her guest, teacher, activist, organizer, Michael Badges Kenning. They will be talking jobs and industry, the dirty and failing ones of the past, and the clean green ones of tomorrow, if we choose that pathway to the future.
Hello, this is Patty DeMarco, and we're going to be talking about pathways to a new economy that works for all of us. My guest today is Michael Badges Kenning, who is the vice president of the Cherry Valley Borough Council in Butler County, Pennsylvania. And he has been a teacher and an activist and organizer with Marcellus Outreach Butler for many years. Michael, welcome to our program. I'm so glad to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Patty. I'm glad to be here. This is exciting.
Yeah, we've been, I think, both of us involved with Marcellus Outreach Butler since the Fossil Free Energy Fair days way back. And I know that it's become a lot more acute and intense as the cracker plant in Monaca has begun to rise into the sky. And I know that people have become a little frustrated seeing that come up, but also more and more aware that this is a fragile industry and isn't necessarily the groundwork of our future. How are people feeling about things as the cracker is rising?
Well, it depends on where they live. I mean, for folks that live next to wells, and if they're unhappy with it, they're alarmed with the idea that the cracker plant's going in. But the scary thing about, at least in Butler County, is that a lot of folks just don't connect the two things. They don't recognize that the cracker is going to cause problems. So yeah, it's up in the air.
Yeah. And I think the biggest concern that I have around this whole industry is that it's building another 20 to 50 year dependency on a fossil-based industry when we're facing a climate crisis of existential proportions and we're going the wrong direction. It's a lost opportunity cost as well. And I know you also have been concerned about that too.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I see climate change in my life, in my garden. In the last 5 years, I picked peppers on election day, which is bizarre. My first year in Cherry Valley, which was 1982, we had a killing frost on August 29th. Now, I realize that's not normal, but I mean, it was a wake-up call for me. And then this last 5 years have been a wake-up call as well, as I've seen this growing season extended.
Yeah, we've had people think that, well, we're not on the coast, so we're not having rising seas. And, you know, we're not really as subject to the killing droughts and wildfires that they've had in California. And people sort of don't feel the instant pressure of climate right here. But in fact, we've had extended periods of drought. And when we do have storms, we've had massive mountains of water. We had like 5 inches in a 24-hour period in July this year. and it just washes things out and you end up with these storm surges. So that's going to be the kind of climate thing that we're more likely to experience here. And we're finding across the country that there are climate migrations already occurring. People are leaving the Gulf Coast in terms of industries in particular. They've been wiped out 9 times in the last 5 years because of hurricanes. So that's why they're looking so intensely to move the petrochemical industry into our area. And people don't make the connection, as you said, Michael, between the climate changing and these major changes in industrial patterns.
You know, the flip side of that is that I live in a part of Pennsylvania called the oil region. And Drake's Well is less than 30 miles from my house. And what we have noticed is a migration out of the region as the petrochemical industry has collapsed in this part of Pennsylvania. They've had to leave. I have 4 kids and 2 of them had to get out of the area because there's no employment here. And my other 2 kids have to migrate sort of just to get work in their field. They come home every night, but they have to travel a long ways. So yeah, there's both ways it's happening.
Yeah. So what we really need to do is look at what are the opportunities that we're confronted with and how can we shape a future that is more resilient and more stable and more sustainable. And I think that's something that can be done by deliberate policy choices, or we can sort of drift and let other people decide what our future is going to be. So one of the things that I was hoping we could begin as a baseline is the fact that we have a lot of opportunities for development if we would to the investment in our own communities that we've been willing to put into fossil industries over the years.
Yeah. And again, that's something that needs to happen here. We have lost so much. And well, one of the biggest employers in Venango County was Joy Manufacturing. They used to make coal mining equipment and they are no more. They were done in by the collapse of coal. So, Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, we've invested a lot in the fossil industries as a policy matter. The subsidization of the fossil industries, oil, coal, and gas, has been a huge part of the federal government and also even the state government in terms of giving taxpayer support to industries that under the climate solution, we really need to move away from. And I think that's where this is no longer a strictly economic issue. It's a moral issue as well. Because if we don't begin turning that tide, we are going to end up having tremendous costs from not dealing with climate change.
Well, we also have tremendous costs associated with the actual extraction.
Yeah.
We have a community in Butler County that has been without water for almost 10 years. It'll be 10 years in December. And every Tuesday, they go to a water bank to get 20 to 25 gallons of water. So, I mean, there's a tremendous cost right in that one community.
Right. And that isn't counted in the cost of fracking, right? People don't think about the cost of replacing water or the fact that that water is a life support, really, for the people who live there. But we've spent $20.5 billion a year in direct production subsidies for oil, gas, and coal extraction. And there are permanent investment tax credits for oil, gas, and coal of $7.4 billion a year, compared to about $1.3 billion for renewables, which have to be renewed in every budget cycle. And it's also a lot of tax credits and loopholes amounting to nearly $10 billion a year. There are a lot of accounting things that they do in order to give subsidies to these industries, including below market value leasing of federal lands, which, you know, I find really, really frustrating because these are taxpayer dollars that are now going to accrue the benefit of private companies, many of the multinational corporations. And the costs, like not having water, like having contamination in the land, like having long-term contamination from leakage and spillage over a long life of these wells once they're finished and are abandoned, that all falls on the taxpayer. Abandoned mine lands on coal mined property. It's over $8 billion in Pennsylvania of the cost of remediating 3,000 miles of rivers that are lost. And those fall to the taxpayer. The profits go to the private corporations and the costs go to the taxpayers again. So we really need to reframe the problem a little bit and look at how we can recognize that we're not losing something by shifting to a different industry. We have to pay attention to what kinds of things we can do if we were to attract investment, things people would want instead of destruction of their water and their land. And I'm sure your constituents tell you about some of these things, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, one of the things going for us in Northern Butler County and all of Venango County is that we have beautiful landscape. We have the Allegheny River cutting through the middle of Venango County and into Butler County, very near where I live. We have beautiful forests. We have all kinds of stuff. But we also have a toxic legacy from previous generations of extraction. You alluded to orphaned and abandoned wells. We have them in prodigious numbers. We have acid mine runoff from old coal mines. Yeah, so I hear about that all the time. And then the other thing is I live near a town called Eau Claire, which is French for clear water. Most of my neighbors do not have clear water. They have water that's been damaged by coal extraction and fracking, obviously. So, yeah.
We're shrinking our environmental capital, the true wealth of the nation. And it's been quantified. It's about $230 million a year for shellfish harvest, which have been lost to acidification of oceans, $140 billion a year in losses to the recreation industry from the loss of fishing and hunting. And you've described places where that would happen in your community. And cold water fishing and skiing would absolutely disappear as an industry under the continuation of climate change. So really, what we're looking at here isn't a technical problem, right? We're looking at moral and ethical choices that we're making deliberately as policy choices. So I think one of the things I wanted to think about a little bit is how the green jobs economy can actually help us rebuild our communities. We need to have the fear of change that is prevalent among people who've been in these extractive industries replaced with something like confidence in a transformation that will give us a better future.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that's another one of the things. We are so used to being an extraction zone that I don't think we even can imagine ourselves not being harmed. It's kind of a sad situation.
Well, if people get this fatalistic attitude that, you know, that's the price you pay for having a good job, right?
Yep.
But if you look at what a green job actually is, it's jobs in businesses that produce goods and services that benefit the environment and conserve natural resources. That's the official labor statistics definition of a green job. And the choices in the green energy field, they are not uneconomic anymore. The cost of the technology and renewables is dropping sharply, so that if you look at the Lazard life cycle cost analysis of utility scale installations for all kinds of generation, you find that wind is now cheaper even than natural gas, and that solar has fallen and fallen and fallen, so that a utility scale solar is competitive now and cheaper than coal. So on a going forward basis, even with the heavy subsidies on the fossil side, the renewable industries are catching and are actually making tremendous progress. So the thing that we are facing, though, is that if we leave this to the invisible hand of the market, it's going to take a long time, right? And we have to accelerate this, and which means people need to understand more about the better choices we have in the clean economy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it'd be great if we could get government to buy into that. Instead, I mean, just this last session in our state house, we voted to subsidize fossil fuels again. And it was a bipartisan issue. They both loved it.
Yeah, so. I think that's part of where it comes to us to try to educate people about the nature of work in the clean energy economy. And really, there are three categories. The clean energy production itself, which is wind and solar and, you know, hydro and using storage and artificial intelligence for load management and microgrids. And then there's energy efficiency, which is making what we have work better And then there's the whole issue of environmental management, which you have been talking about, just restoring our water, restoring our land, reclaiming our forests, replanting and regenerating productivity to land that has been harmed. That is a huge industry. And there have been large growths in the employment in these industries, even in Pennsylvania. The other area that has a huge opportunity for making clean energy jobs is advanced vehicles and transportation. If we electrify the vehicle fleet and make a lot of those components here in our area, there are tremendous amounts of jobs available in that field.
Yeah, and that would be a wonderful thing too. I mean, I think about often is I have a neighbor, she's in her late 80s now, but she can remember that she used to be able to walk to town, the little town called Boyers, and hop on a train and shop in Pittsburgh. Now, mm-hmm. if you don't have a vehicle and you live right. in a rural part of Pennsylvania, you have to travel a long way to even shop. So we need to think about how we, number one, local economies, you can't walk to a store anymore. Walmart and other places like that have shut those things down.
See, and investing in our own communities, I don't know how it is in your council, but I'm vice president of my borough council as well. And we're always having these arguments about, oh no, another big box store came and our town is going to shut down. We need to start refocusing on, and I think this COVID virus has brought this out a lot, that what really matters to people when you're working on Zoom all day is where you live. And the people that you encounter every day and having the conveniences and amenities of life at hand so that you don't have to encounter a lot of other people in public transportation. And because being concentrated in trains is kind of not safe right now. So the need for communities to be really fully representative to their people in terms of what you need and what you have close by. This is an opportunity to really reinvest in our own communities.
Oh, I think that's critical. I think one thing we've lost, especially here in rural areas, is the whole notion of what a community is. When we moved here in 1982, the woman who owned the place before us, Mrs. Baker, told us about how in 1957, her barn was hit by lightning and it burned to the ground. And the entire community showed up that weekend and rebuilt the barn. Now, if we don't even know our neighbors a lot of times because right. they work elsewhere and they don't have time to interact with each other. There's not that neighborliness. So, yeah, that's a critical thing.
I have noticed that since March or so, people have been walking around because that's what you do. You go outside and walk to get exercise. The gyms are closed. So your neighbors greet you, introduce each other. We've had a couple of backyard and front yard, bring your own masked 6 foot apart parties across the streets where people just get together and meet each other, you know, because you can. And it's a wonderful thing. We've had virtual scavenger hunts where people put pictures in their doors for the kids to see when they're out walking, and they do a promotion. We did one for Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. We did your favorite pet, different things just to make it more interesting, but people get to know each other. And I think that cohesion of unique neighborhoods is really what makes us all unique. You know, if you go into a place where all you have are big box stores or the strip mall and they're all exactly the same, we've lost the uniqueness that gives a place character.
We've also lost the whole expertise thing. For instance, now when I go to Home Depot, I have the guy that works there say, go to aisle 7. But it used to be I had an Eau Claire hardware store and I could drive up there. And the owner, Ken, would tell me exactly what I need, how to use it. And, you know, we've lost that. And we've also lost that in farming, too. I mean, a lot of our farmers are getting so old and that their expertise is leaving with them. So it's, yeah.
And this is really important. There is a young farmers movement in Pennsylvania, and there is also a movement for land transfer that helps avoid the really punitive inheritance taxes by doing cooperatives for land. People can get into the smaller, more diversified farming mode instead of these thousands of acres at a time for monocrop. There are a lot of areas in our part of the world, especially in West Virginia and Kentucky and parts of Pennsylvania, where they're food deserts, because you have thousands of acres planted to corn or soy or some export crop, and there's not enough there to feed the people.
Well, that's where I live, Patty. That's what we got going on here. Yeah, we have soybeans and corn.
There you go. And so what we need to do is look at regenerating an economy that is regenerative instead of extractive. And, yeah. You know, and we're already headed that way. If you look right now, Pennsylvania energy sector jobs, we had 43,306 in the fossil industries, and we had 90,722 in energy efficiency, renewable energy, clean vehicles, solar, wind, energy storage, and grid modernization. And they are growing at the rate of 27 to 30% per year. And the fossil industry jobs have been flat or falling. So this is not cheap labor either. These are highly skilled jobs. And if you look at the national average employment, it's about $23.86 an hour for the energy industry on average nationally. And in the clean energy sectors, we have an average of $28.41 for clean energy production, $25.90 for energy efficiency, and $21.45 for environmental management. So these are not low value, low quality jobs. And the myth that people say, oh, well, they don't pay. Well, they do pay. And you have a whole range of skills involved, ranging all the way from people who need a college education to people who just need a basic willingness to show up and put out the work. So yeah. I think what we need to do is to encourage investment into our own communities. I know when I went up to do the first Reimagine Beaver County exercise that we did with the League of Women Voters, we put out that proposition. If you were given a $6 billion over 5 years incentive, instead of sending it to Shell Corporation, what would you do in your own community? And people came up with wonderful ideas, ranging from we could grow industrial hemp to make plastic substitutes, and we could do a lot of return to recreational uses of our land. And I know that you have a lot of your constituents in Marcellus Outreach Butler have good ideas in that area too.
Yeah, we also did a Reimagine Butler, and a lot of those same things. We also talked about microbreweries and other things. But what kills me is that, again, we're dealing with people that just don't understand that it's a possibility.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think that's the part where we really have to reframe this whole problem is an ethical decision. The laws of nature are not negotiable. It isn't going to get better by itself. If we keep burning fossil fuels, it's going to keep getting worse. And we need to give people the confidence that if we work together, despite our differences, we can avert the biggest of the problems that we're going to face if we don't take action. And we need to make sure that when we're spending taxpayers' money, it goes into our own communities. I know your council is probably struggling with the budget just as mine is. And I know that we can't even establish an enterprise zone in our town because we're not in distress yet. We have to wait to have an enterprise zone? Really? And you're giving tax incentives to multinational corporations? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, we're investing in Wall Street and not Main Street, which is just a trend we have. And I want to go back to something you were talking about. You mentioned the hourly wage for workers in the new economy. Right now in Venango County, the average hourly wage is about $19.30 an hour. Mm-hmm. And there'd be people here that would love to make the 20 some dollars an hour, but that's not an opportunity. We aren't talking about the new economy too much here. We're still wed to the fossil fuels.
Well, I think the more people know about this, and if we can just get that pipeline diverted from putting tax dollars into the past and start putting tax dollars into the future, I think we can turn this a U-turn. Really, if we continue right now on the trajectory that our policy is, we are on a path to 4 degrees centigrade increase before the end of the century, which is not viable. I mean, it would not be a habitable planet. In order to make a U-turn on those policies, we need to move awareness to outrage. I know I used to talk about moving awareness to action. Action isn't enough anymore. We have to be totally outraged that we are compromising the future of our children. And I think we have to raise voices in Harrisburg and raise voices in Washington to give local support for local empowerment. And that's our way forward on this issue.
I agree with you 100%. I'm beyond the point of outrage at this point. I got involved in this shale thing when my daughter told my wife, Karen, and I that we were about to become grandparents. And we looked around us and we thought, no, this isn't the way we want to be treating future generations.
Right. I have grandchildren as well, and they're teenagers now, but I know that our children deserve a living planet. And it's our obligation to do everything we can to see to it that they get it. Yes. So thank you so much, Michael, for sharing your thoughts with me and your ideas. If people want to know more about you and what you're up to, is there a website we can send people to?
Well, absolutely. You can go to mikeforpa64.com and you can see what I'm up to.
Thank you. And mine is patriciademarco.com. And of course, you can always go to thebattleofhomestead.org for lots of good information about events. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we're back. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you. And with me is
Larry McCullough. Hello.
Hello. Larry, thanks again for being with us. We're going to be closing out this episode, as we do, with a song selection from Larry and a little bit of a musical surprise here. Let me put it that way. But before that, we are going to have Larry put on his communication manager hat here. We'd like to hear the latest going on with the Battle Homestead Foundation in terms of these free online events. So what's coming up next?
Well, every week we have Charlie's Monday Marker, which is a video tour about 10 minutes long, where historian Dr. Charles McCollister takes the viewer on a trip through Pittsburgh labor history. And what it is basically is, in 2016, he and Howard Scott wrote a book called Labor History Sites of Pittsburgh. And there are, I think, 62 of them. And those are those blue state historical markers you see around. And they've
That's right. You see them driving by the side of the road, right?
Yeah. And there's only a paragraph because, you know, there's not just that much room for words. What Charlie McCollister does is he goes really back into the deep story of what these events were, who the personalities were, because some of them are about people as well as events. But Charlie really gives the deep background and the real history of that.
And, you know, really gives us insight into what's going on today as well. So,
sure.
And Charlie always has something interesting to say.
Absolutely.
So, head on to YouTube, head to battleofhomestead.org to get the link to the YouTube page and check that out as well. And head to the website for the podcast, essentialworkpodcast.org. You can check out all of our prior episodes. You can find everything right there, including links to things that the folks, the places, the songs referenced in our episodes. You can also find all the podcast platforms, whatever platform you like, it's going to be there. There's links there right on the website. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Amazon now as well, Google Podcasts, and more. We also encourage you to give feedback, make comments. Larry runs our Facebook page. You can also give us a call or send us an email about the podcast. Let us know what you think. Let us know how we're doing. Or if you have any ideas for topics or individuals we should be having on the program in the future, we're always open to suggestions. Give us a call, 412-326-9435. That number is in the episode description. Or a bhfpodcast.nathan@gmail.com. Send us an email. We'll get back to you and love to hear what you have to say. Also, a couple thanks going out to some folks that we depend on for every episode, making it what it is. Brittany Sheets made our logo. You can check her out at bsheetscreative.com.
Also, Angela Bachman is always there for us to help us out with editing, assistance technologically with our production. That's soundgirl.com is her website. And last but not least, we have original music, and that comes from Jason Kendall. And jasonkendallproductions.com is his website. Be sure to head out there to see all the stuff he's up to and all the music he's done as well. So with that, Larry, every week the song you choose is always inspired by our feature interview. We just heard Patty with an excellent interview talking about the connections between the environment and work and some focus on fracking and a lot of issues here in the greater Pittsburgh area. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, I tell you, there are a lot of songs in the folk music tradition about environmental destruction and protection. One of the most popular through the years has been Paradise. That's the title of it, Paradise, mm-hmm. written by John Prine in 1971 for his debut album. Paradise has been recorded uncountable times, performed publicly so often everywhere in the world, but most people really assume it's a traditional Appalachian folk song. But it really is something written by John Prine. You probably heard it, you know, go something like. Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by Green River where paradise lay? I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. That's the chorus. Anyway, yeah, I mean,
excellent,
everybody's heard it.
Excellent, Larry. Just so everyone is clear, that is Larry performing right here on the podcast live. That was not pre-recorded. Him on the harmonica and singing a cappella off that last note there. Thank you so much, Larry. That was a great treat, great surprise for us. And great to know about some of the popular songs around this issue and around environmentalism.
Well, that song that Prine wrote was based on a very real and massive strip mining destruction of land along the Green River in eastern Kentucky by Peabody Coal Company. It happened during the 1950s, continued on for a while. Essentially, they just deleted the entire town of Paradise, which was, you know, had a post office, school, everything, just gone. That's the area where Prine's family was from. And he recalled that pristine environment and its destruction in the song Paradise. And like I say, in the 70s, it just took off. And you go to bluegrass festivals, music festivals, people be singing it.
You hear it everywhere, huh?
Yeah, and it just became really part of the tradition. But we're actually not going to hear that song today. We're going to hear another song.
We did, Larry. But yeah.
You got to hear the whole thing.
Not the whole thing.
We have another song about the environment that was released just last year. It is called Freakin' Frackin'. And it is all about the damage caused by fracking to people and nature. It was written and recorded by Jay Kolstad, K-U-L-S-T-A-D, Jay Kolstad, who hails originally from St. Paul, Minnesota, and now lives in the Tampa, Florida region. He's a very socially concerned singer-songwriter. His album, World Gone Blind, has songs like Haymarket Massacre, The Glaciers Are Crying, The Ocean Is Coming, Spam Town, Another World Is Possible, and the title song, World Gone Blind. 13 songs in all on this debut album, and a lot of very moving
lyrics. All original songs that he's written.
Okay. A lot of very moving lyrics, excellent guitar playing and singing. It's not really easy always to express political views in a song so that it becomes more than just slogans. But Jay Kolstad does it here, and we hope he can do it on more albums. He's clearly is inspired. Definitely recommend people check this out. We have more information about this song on essentialworkpodcast.com. And here is a short audio clip of Freakin' Frackin' from Jay Kolstad.
Yeah, I'm here to talk about the freakin' frackin'. They do a little lying and some major hacking. Drill themselves a big old toxic coal. Right into our collective soul. Can't drink the water, it's completely insane. It's filled with pollution and methane. Now draw me a bath and I can set it on fire. It's a freaking fracking funeral pyre.
2021 has been a year of transition for all of us. At the Battle of Homestead Foundation, they have discovered new ways to advance their mission of heritage, education, and social action. They expanded their educational outreach to include a weekly online tour of people's history locations through the Charlie's Monday Marker video series, as well as far-reaching discussion of social and economic trends with the podcast Essential Work, The Past, Present, and Future of Jobs. They presented 7 timely online public panels featuring nationally known authors and historians. Topics included workforce shifts from heavy industry to healthcare, the women's suffrage movement, uprooted immigrant neighborhoods, protest songs in today's civil action movements, the 1921 Battle of Blair Mountain, historical roots of today's social philanthropy, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's world-famous city steps. They establish a professionally archived labor history collection, thousands of documents, photos, recordings, and remembrances of labor history spanning decades. They co-sponsored the Blair Mountain Centennial in West Virginia, honoring a long neglected part of U.S. history with a landmark Labor Day weekend of events. They built a new and more accessible website, which you should check out at battleofhomestead.org. They did all this with help, the essential support of all the individuals like you who enjoyed the programming, appreciate the hard work of the citizens, workers, educators, and historians that make it happen, and value their mission to preserve, interpret, and promote a people's history focused on the significance of the dramatic labor conflict at Homestead, Pennsylvania in 1892. In 2022, they'll present a new round of thought-provoking programming. Membership, along with special donations, is essential to their success. Annual membership is only $30, $20 for retirees or the underemployed, and just $10 for students. Join now at battleofhomestead.org. You can also choose to contribute at any of a number of special donor levels, and donations are tax deductible. Membership also provides multiple free admissions to a variety of historical museums and sites in the greater Pittsburgh area. Check out the details at battleofhomestead.org. As this singular year comes to a close, while we still may have much to be thankful for, we also all see the urgent necessity of doing more to share our progressive labor history to a wider audience and inspire a new generation of activists and organizers. Your membership and engagement ensures that the Battle of Homestead Foundation will continue to do just that. Show your support today at battleofhomestead.org. In solidarity, BHF thanks you and wishes you good health, positive spirits, and both peaceful and joyous days ahead.